Blog
and now,
Radio.
Live from Jacksonville, Florida, and New York City, New York, where the Yankees didn't make it into the World Series once again, it's the Mike Boyle Show, starring Mike Boyle.
Hey, everybody, and that was Mark Helfgott, of course, our faithful gout-stricken sidekick.
Yeah, baby.
I mean, what the fuck? I mean,
there is no
I'd
doubt.
Rather have the gout than fucking have to listen to you and your struggles with the gout. I mean, I'd rather I had
no,
it.
No, you wouldn't. No.
Yeah,
no,
I
you
would.
Say that.
I would say that,
but you would not say it if you...
Yeah, because I would just shut the fuck up. You know what I mean?
You would be whimpering.
I wouldn't go through life like, oh, my God, I got the gout.
All right. Who's worse with the crying? You, me or your uncle?
Huh?
Who's worse, me or your uncle?
You.
Oh, my God. That must be pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, my uncle doesn't really cry. He's just like, you got a toothache. I'm like, all right. Well, I'll take you to a fucking dentist. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. And, you know, I do what I got to do. Yeah, dude, I've been in the fucking, oh, my God.
You took your you took the little girl to the, you could be a dental hygienist by now, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm taking everybody to the dentist. And you know what pisses me off is like when I gotta do anything, nobody gives a fuck. Like I'm on my own, you know what I'm saying? Like, like fuck you, fat man. Do your shit. Like nobody cares. You know what I'm saying?
You know what's
go
interesting?
Go fuck yourself, Mikey.
You know, when tomorrow I got to go to the procedure. Yes, I'm becoming a woman. No, I have to go for that procedure tomorrow. And, you know, they say you must have someone pick you up. So, you know, I write down Johnny John Johnson sometimes, Teddy Kennedy, you know, Milton Berle. They don't pay any attention to it because no, I don't want anybody to come get me. I don't want my friend Derek, to come get me or any of these Alta Cockers because they'll all come. You know, the Alta Cockers from the synagogue, the rabbis will come. You know, if I put a few shekels into the kupa, they'll come. But I like going by myself. I don't like to have to wait for people. I mean, unless I'm totally incontinent to come. What?
What the fuck is an Alta Cocker? What are you talking about?
Alta Cocker is an old Jew.
Oh, all right.
Say hello, Mr. Helfgott. I'll talk like an old Alta Cocker. Talk to me. Say hello, Mr. Helfgott.
Say hello, Mr. Helfgott.
Oh, hello. You must be Mark's friend, Mike Boyle. What's going on?
All right, well, listen, let me get the show started. Will you, Mark? It's enough for your
Oi.
Shit. Everybody, we have Macadamia.
I've got a thing in my throat.
Shut up.
Oi.
Shut the fuck up. We got Macadamia. Come on, Mark. Let me do the show. We got Macadamia on tonight. Matt is a very gifted comedian. First time I saw Matt, I'm not going to talk too much because I'm going to wait until he gets on. First time I ever saw Matt, we were getting ready to host Alonzo Bowden. Remember Alonzo was on our show?
Oh,
and Alonzo
yeah.
had won America's Funniest Comedian or whatever. What was that show? America's
Top Finagler.
America's Top Comic or whatever it was. And Alonzo was coming on the show, and I went to see Alonzo. And Matt actually was opening for Alonzo, and he was hysterical. So Matt's on. He's a Las Vegas-based comic, awesome guy. So I'm very happy he's going to be calling in a little bit. Obviously, our cartoon is doing really well. So
very
I want to
well.
Thank everybody who's watching it. Yeah, Rotten Apple. We just recorded a really funny episode that Mark came up with a very funny idea about the congresswoman who wears a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
We wrote one
What's
about
with that woman.
And she's fucking nuts. But
do you think she's Hopalong Cassidy or something?
Yeah, so we're having a good time. We're doing our shit. Mark's got the gap.
No doubt.
All kinds of good stuff happening in Mike Boyle land, everyone. So everybody, you've been very, very kind and very supportive. Thank you very much. Of course, last week we had the beautiful Sally Mullins on, Sally, wonderful Los Angeles comedian. She was voted LA's top comic. Did you know that, Mark?
You told me that, and she was pretty funny too. But she also
She's
has another thing that I was totally floored by her profession.
Her other endeavor.
But, don't call it profession. She might get arrested.
Her other endeavor, but she's very beautiful, and you know, I have a big crush on her, but seems like, you know, she doesn't go for guys my age, Marco. She goes for younger guys.
No, I remember last week she was thinking about it. You could probably get her to move. I mean, she's what, you're younger than you? What is she, 40?
She's my age, but she goes for younger guys. She goes for like 25-year-old guys, Mark.
I know how that is.
You know, guys are challenged. You know, our equipment doesn't work the same when we were 50 as it did when we were 25. You know, women are lucky in that regard. But anyway, you know.
They don't have to get anything hard.
Mark, should we take this caller? Let's see who's on the air. Hold on a minute. We have a caller, even though our guest isn't on yet. Hold on.
Bitch is doing
517 area code. You're on the air. Who's this? Hello.
571. Oh no. Hey, it's Matt. What's happening?
Nah.
Hey,
Matt called from a different area code.
For whatever reason, my phone wasn't going through. So this is my wife's line.
So I didn't get to like talk up the right way. I thought we just had a different caller. But this is Matt. Oh. Marco, so say hello to Matt.
Hi.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
I have the gout.
Matt, we're so glad to have you here, but I was just talking about you that, of course, I met you tonight. I went to go see Alonzo, and I thought you were hysterical. And can I tell everybody why I thought you were so funny that night? I don't want to try to do...
Please.
I don't want
to... Sure, alcohol. Maybe alcohol and some sort
no,
of...
No, dude, I don't drink. Let me tell you, Mark, I probably told you some of his stuff, because... When I see somebody funny, I tell you about it. But the thing, he had a great stage presence. And anybody who watches the guy on stage knows that. He moves around the stage, really funny guy. But the thing that really got me, he's got Palestinian parents and Jewish parents. Is that it? Or
I've got Iranian father and a Russian
and
Jewish
mother.
But somehow I came out Puerto Rican.
Okay. Okay, so he's going like this, Mark. He goes, and then the one bit that I really remember was, you should see the holidays. They stay in the living room and argue over who's going to occupy the couch. And I just fucking laughed and laughed and laughed for like fucking 10 minutes. But, I mean, all the rest of your set was really good too. But that one bit got me really, who's going to occupy the couch? And I said, it's so fucking typical like how families argue. But, dude, that was so succinct. And so funny, and the face you made when you told that joke, and that made me love you instantly. So I just thought you were awesome. That was like 5 years ago or whatever it was, but you know, I just followed you since then, and I'm so glad that you're here to talk to us tonight. So how are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad you remember that bitch. You know, it's a very New York kind of thing, because like in. You know, even up until I was a kid, you know, people were just like one thing. Like, if you asked somebody what they were Irish, they were German, they were Italian, you know. And we're kind of us were in their 40s and 50s, kind of like the first generation of people who started becoming mixed things, you know. Now, you know, until the 60s come along, a little free weed and free love and good weed will mix this stuff up quickly. So now people started becoming two things. But, you know, what I happen to be is, you know, like I said, my father's name is Mohammed. I mean, the jokes write themselves. I go, you can't convert a Mohammed to Judaism. First, you got to change his name to Larry, you know, and my father's not going to do that. So it's such a personal bit, and I'm glad that you remember. That's the one you remembered as opposed to, you know, some airline bit or some bullshit other joke. You know, I appreciate that you remember that one.
No, Matt, it really made me laugh. I mean, I remember, like, I had to, like, suck wind for a second. And it wasn't just funny. It was just funny and just perfect. And the way you delivered it and your face, like, you are a real comedian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, anybody could write something funny, but way it came out of your mouth and the way your face looked while it was coming out of your mouth. I mean, I honestly thought it was perfect. You know what I mean? Like, if I had a grade, it would be 10.
I mean, you know, I'm doing this since I'm 3 years old. You know, I started doing this in my family living room, you know, when I'm about 3 years old. By the time I'm six, I'm going into the mafia social clubs and, you know, kind of doing jokes for the guys there, and they throw me a buck here, a quarter there. And when I was 10 years old, my parents take me to Vegas, and I see my first show in Las Vegas, Joan Rivers and Shecky Green at the Riviera. Know I want to have a show in Las Vegas. 35 years later, I get my own show at the Riviera in the same room where I saw that first show when I was 10 years old. And then 2 years later, they blow up the Riviera, and I'm back on the street again. But, you know, that's a part of the story you got to block out, you know. So, you know, I've been doing this a long time and kind of an old-school comedian. Like, guys that started, you know, this is my 29th year doing stand-up. You know, I never really had a job. I just did this right out of college. And, you know, there were guys who were born to do this, and now, you know, stand-up's become something else, which may be, and it's been around since the dawn of time. I mean, caveman time, there was some schmuck that got up in front of the fire and kind of made people forget about their day. And, you know, you think about the court jester, I mean, that's like the first government job, you know? I mean, he's in the royal court, you know? I mean, but now it's not people who were born to do this. It's people who kind of, you know, watch somebody else. And now comedy's about how you look. You got to be good-looking. Where the fuck would you have developed a sense of humor if you were good looking? You'd be too busy fucking, you know?
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
You know,
right.
So it's all crazy, but I like how you can see that, because I see, you know, all my contemporaries and you know, these guys are masters of the craft now, like floundering out on cruise ships or, you know, working in retirement communities. And you see some kid who's got, you know, 2 years, but with glasses and a beard and wouldn't know, you know, comedy if a pie hit him in the face. You know, it's just you know, it's more style than substance now. So, but you know, hey, listen, everything is like that, mate. You know, music, entertainment, everything.
Yeah. Nothing's the same as it was 10 years ago or whatever. And that's true. And there's nothing you could do about it. You just ride it out, I guess. But I mean, no, I tell you guys honest truth. I remember too, you were doing a Showtime special or something. Was it Showtime?
Mac and Cheese. Yeah. We shot my first 1 hour special was Mac and Cheese. We shot that in 2012. So this is probably, like you said, 5 years ago. And you know, that, you know, wound up going straight to DVD. And, you know, when you do those things, you never have control of what it's going to be. You know, somebody else puts in $100,000 and, you know, the production company takes over. But I was really, really proud of that. And that special is what was the basis for the show I took to Vegas, which was called 40 is Not the New 20. So, you know, that was really important. And at the time I was like, oh my God, this is going to change my life. And it did, but not in the ways that I thought. It didn't necessarily make me famous. It just, you know, kind of allowed me to figure out this act, you know, because I've always wanted to show in Vegas, but I never had the product. I mean, it's not, you know, you need to, and now in Vegas, almost exclusively, you can only beat it with fame. Whereas, like, 10 years ago, a guy like Danny Gans could beat it with talent. Nobody knew who Danny Gans was, but he's the most talented guy to ever perform in Las Vegas. So I kind of took his model and wrote it for as far as I could. But, you know, Mac and Cheese, you know, that one joke, and it's funny, when even with 40's Not the New 20, the first joke I ever wrote was, I was 38 years old, and I fell in the shower and cracked my head open. And while I was laying on the tub floor, all I kept thinking to myself was, why do people say 40's the New 20? When I was in my 20s, I was having sex in the shower. Now I'm falling down here by myself. And that one joke became a whole 90-minute show that ran in Las Vegas for 2 years. So you never know what it's going to be. But Mac and Cheese was that special. And that one joke was about, you know, that's one of the four major food groups for little kids. It's Skittles, Twizzlers, Mac and Cheese, and Chicken Nuggets. And I'm like, how are these little fuckers alive? You know, if I served that tonight, we'd all be dead by morning, you know? So it was that's where the Mac and Cheese came from. And also the way I treat stand-up and kind of the way you treat it and a lot of the old-school guys treat it is, you know, it's kind of like my mother's mac and cheese, you know? I mean, it's not Kraft mac and cheese where it's, you know, designed just to kind of be cheap. And my mother put love and heart and soul into her mac and cheese and had the little crunchy mac and cheese on the top with the cheese. And, you know, so I always think about my act as like comfort food for the soul. So that's where the name came from.
Well, I guess, you know what? I was very proud, though, when I saw the preparations going on for that. And I just said, I mean, we weren't really friends, Matt, you know. But I just said, I was so happy for you. And I said, you know, I said, oh, this is, you believe this shit? Sorry about that, guys.
No.
I shut my phone and it rings on my computer. Anyway, I said when it happened, I said, you know what? I said, I'm so happy for this guy. But then I kept watching everything you were doing. And then I saw when you were doing stuff in Vegas. And then I saw when you got married. And I saw when you had your baby. And, you know,
some people call that stalking. Some people call that stalking, by the way. Just so you
know. No, I'm a fan. That's all. I'm just a fan.
Yeah, nah, I appreciate it.
I'm a fan. No, I really am a fan, dude, because let me tell you that, you know, when you go out and you stand up, even on a low level that I do it and have done it, it's like when you do enough of it, it's not so easy to laugh anymore because it's like, you know, all right, you know, you see so much of it.
You can see it coming. Yeah, you know how they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but when you find somebody that you do laugh at, you just love them. So I just love good stand-up. So, and you're a nice guy. And then I remember you put so much time into trying to help people when you try to tell people, hey, you know, watch what you eat and watch and juice this. And I remember how much time you spent trying to educate people. And so I just know you're a beautiful person. So it's so good to talk to you. It really is good.
I appreciate it. And we could get into all that part of it either about the juicing, but, you know, about – so you saw him when we met in Florida, it was 5 years ago, and then that January 1st, I think actually about 3 months after I met you, I had a heart attack, and not nothing fun or exciting about that, but I remember it was the same age. I think I was maybe 40, so if I'm 49 now, I'm 44 then, but it was a heart attack. My mother had her first heart attack at 44, and I mean, I was 350 pounds. I mean, my cholesterol was over 300. I had diabetes, sleep apnea. We couldn't have a baby, so we were actually going to go to my wife's from Eastern Europe, a country called Moldova. Nobody knows what Moldova is. I say it's right between Romania and Narnia, just south of Middle Earth.
Narnia.
But so she's from there. Well, we're going to go adopt a baby from over there because, you know, I mean, when I see a little cup, I get a little skittish because, you know, I've been through so many fertility things, and it was me, and I was basically dying on a cellular level. And then that January, we became vegans and still about plant-based because I think vegans are annoying. I still wear leather clothes and eat honey, and, you know, that makes me not a vegan. But we found this new lifestyle, and it totally saved my life. So for the first year, kind of right after you knew me, we spent a year just trying to tell our story. And then, you know, a year, 6 months into this process, my wife gets pregnant with a little baby Tulip, and diabetes is gone, sleep apnea is gone, and I just felt like I had to at least take some time and forget about comedy and maybe use those skills to tell this story and start helping people, and we did. I mean, we've cured thousands and thousands of people of diabetes and sleep apnea and lupus and all sorts of things that are all man-made diet-related, you know, illnesses. So, you know, that'll always be something. That's my passion, but... you know, I was born, I came out of the womb being able to tell jokes, you know. I mean, that's kind of my blessing and my curse, you know, at the same time. But, you know, we definitely will keep the mission going because, you know, it's amazing when you give somebody back their life. I mean, I couldn't put my shoes on when we first met, and 6 months later we ran a half marathon. I mean, the body is just amazing. It's not going to judge you. It's once you give it what it needs, I mean, you literally heal instantly and you know. That's the gift I get to share with people.
That is so awesome. Well, let me ask you a question. I just started drinking. Like I went through something like what you went through. I was diabetic and I don't juice so much, but I stopped eating so much. Right. And, and I'm doing a lot better too, but, I just started drinking that beet juice, like that they crystallize the beets.
Yep.
And I mix a teaspoon of that shit with the water every morning on an empty stomach. And I feel like it's a little something. So I tried doing the juice, like that thing where you, not the juice, but you know the one that grinds all the shit and you drink it. What was that? You know what that blender's called. I forget what it's called.
What, a Vitamix?
Not the Vitamix.
Or a NutriBullet, or a NutriBullet.
NutriBullet,
yeah.
I was doing that with the fucking kale, and I was doing that, and it was just like too much because for me, like I really just wanted to get rid of all carbs for about, and I had to get my sugar really under control.
Sure,
so,
no, absolutely.
Okay, so even doing like the juice and shit was too much sugar for a while. Now my sugar's been fine, thank God, for the last 6 months. My A1Cs are normal. First time in my adult life, Matt. But I don't drink anything but water. I haven't even had a Diet Coke in like a year. So nothing but water. I don't drink. So I don't do the juice because there's like sugar and stuff in it, but I'm drinking that
sugar.
Shit.
If you put sugar in it, it's supposed to be a green juice. I mean, there's no sugar in kale. It wasn't the kale that was hurting you.
It was
the problem with juice is people want it to taste better, so they put mango and pineapple and stuff. Obviously, you know, sugar in those. Though that sugar isn't the same as refined white sugar, and you mentioned Diet Coke and things like that. I mean, it's amazing how many people I talk to. It's like the data is there. I mean, you know, I mean, might use the internet for something other than, you know, masturbating, and you'd find all the information is there. They can't hide it from us anymore. So soda, when people say I don't drink soda anymore, no one should be drinking soda. Not in 2017, diet or the other version. You know, I mean, we've been living the wrong way for so long, and you know, it's like if you want to live another 50 years, you're gonna have to live right and perfect, and it's not just about not eating the bad things. It's about healing yourself, giving your body what it needs, you know, because we've been malnourished for so long. And so, you know, again, all this stuff is, but, you know, a lot of people, it's amazing how many grown folks, even with the juice, I'll talk to a grown person. I'm like, this will cure your diabetes. This will cure your sleep apnea. And they go, how does it taste? And I'm like, what are you, five? Like, what kind of fucking question is that for a grown person? I'm like, this thing is going to save your life. And grown, how does it taste? So, you know. But I get it. I mean, I understand.
But let me ask you. I was just going to ask you though. I saw a green drink, and they grind it up now, and you mix it with water. You think that works just as good as doing it with the regular?
And even those people would tell you it doesn't. And I'm actually working with a supplement company now because the technology is getting better, and how they're able to extract the nutrients from, you know, the freeze, the cryogenic process, and all this other kind of stuff. Minerals will live on. I mean, so at the very least, like when you're saying with the drug, you know, the crystallized beet stuff, it's fine because the minerals are all there. And something else we need, iron, magnesium, zinc, all the things that are in there. So when you drink a powdered version, you're going to get that as well. But you're not getting the live enzymes. I mean, nothing. I mean, wheatgrass is one of the best things to drink because it's basically alive when you're drinking it. Now, most of the produce that we get, the kale that I'm putting in my juice, now one of the reasons we moved to the West Coast, where our goal was to move to the West Coast, was to be closer to our food because most of the produce comes from California. So we're literally 3 or 4 days closer to the food being picked than you are there in Florida. So, you know, that's the one thing you're going to get out of the live stuff. But I know people aren't going to do it. You know, I make this juice that I call Matt's Mean Green 13, and it's got 13 things in it: kale, collard greens, so the Swiss chard, which is the top of a beet, turmeric, ginger, cilantro, parsley, and each one has a reason for it. But it's a pain in the ass. I mean, it's people think we have livestock. I mean, they see us every single day harvesting this food and bringing it in. Just to make, you know, three juices. So I get it. I mean, I know people aren't going to do it. So if you're not going to do anything else, shit, do the powder and get as much real juice. And don't make it yourself. It's a pain in the ass. For the cost that it takes to go and buy it and clean up and buy the juice, all that stuff, you can go buy a juice, you know, for $8-$9 somewhere. You know, just go buy it and get a few of them in your week and do some of the powder and cut out the refined sugar and the, you know,
and
all that. Yeah.
Well, okay. All right,
I mean,
Matt,
you know,
so
otherwise, and especially we had the old Jew on there. I mean, half everybody in my Jewish family. I mean, my mother knew nothing about nutrition. She used to save fat from food to put into other food. I mean, you know, I mean, and it's amazing how many Jews I work with on this thing, and they just can't because they can't. Their Judaism and being Jewish is so wrapped up in the food that they're not going to give up kishka. They're not going to give up all this other stuff. So, you know, they're going to go down with the ship. And everyone in my family died a horrible, early, premature, painful death. And you know, that's the gift my mother gave to me. I mean, she used to take a turkey tray full of medicine. Half the medicines were just to counteract the side effects of the other medicines. And one thing you learn very early when you start to learn about health and nutrition is every pill is toxic. Every single pill that's out there, it doesn't cure anything. All it does is trick your body, like the statin drugs. And I know this was supposed to be a comedy show, but we'll move on to that in a second.
No,
but
that's
the statin drugs will kill your liver. They will kill your liver because your liver makes cholesterol. So how it regulates cholesterol is destroying your liver. So you may not die of cholesterol, but you're going to die of liver disease because, you know, that's what medicine does. It just destroys the body and the mind. And, you know, we're looking at the opioid epidemic now. And I used to take 6 Advil a day. I had so much pain, arthritis, everything else. And now I just drink turmeric in my juice, and I don't even remember what pain is. You know, it's amazing. So
That's awesome. All right, let me ask you a question, brother. Let me ask you, what exactly is theylaughyouwin.com?
They Laugh You Win is kind of, before I came to Vegas, you know, that was the problem is that, you know, I knew what my dream was going to be. I knew I wanted to have my own show in Las Vegas. So, but about 15 years into this process, I also realized that from doing it since I'm 3 and also having an immigrant father, both my brothers are lawyers, my sister's a teacher, he was not going to let me be a comedian. I mean, he always said, I did not come to this country for you to tell joke. But he said, if you're going to do it, you better be the best son of a bitch that they've ever seen. So he, you know, being a professor, you know, he's a finance professor at NYU. He really started looking at the science of humor and performing as opposed to, you know, just, you know, smashing a watermelon or whatever it is, but why people laugh. And took me all over the world, you know, to watch comedians. We studied silent comedians. I mean, I'm listening to 2,000-year-old man records throughout my whole childhood. I mean, everyone else is out playing baseball and stickball in the street, and I'm home listening to these old Jews, but I'm learning timing, cadence, rhythm, pacing. I mean, Mel Brooks was a god to me, how anybody could be so gentle and heavy-handed at the same time. I mean, that was fascinating to me. So the science of humor was always something. So 15 years into it, kind of realized that I could teach it and started coaching some professionals. Nobody ever wanted me. I mean, I worked with a lot of comedians, and I taught over 1,000 people how to do stand-up comedy, and it was a graduation show, so they all kind of pulled off stand-up comedy. But a lot of the people I worked with individually, like one guy was trying to run for mayor of Washington, D.C., and he knew he was going to need public speaking. And you know, humor does so much. I mean, everyone's trying to gain somebody's trust and be more authentic and be more genuine. And it's like, you know, if you throw a little humor in there, it does all these things, you know, and without you even really having to think about it. So figured out I could teach it, started teaching some professionals. Like I said, the one guy ran for mayor of D.C. He was a white guy, so I never liked his chances. But he's a councilman now, so he's doing okay. So I started teaching these people, and then I eventually got approached by the Smithsonian Institute in D.C., and they said, would you teach a class here? And that's so I said yes. 2 weeks later, I'm opening up for Michael Bublé. He wasn't Michael Bublé then, but I'm opening up for Michael Bublé. He was looking for an opener, and I remember he said, get on the bus. And I said, you know what, at any other time in my life, I would love to do this. And he was an amazing performer, and the show was fun, and it was going to be this great thing. But I had to say no to Michael Bublé because I was teaching this class at the Smithsonian, which eventually led to like 7 years of my life where I was, you know, teaching comedy classes and public speaking classes and humor classes, but mostly the people who didn't. The application was going to be in business. So, but then, you know, I'm 35 years old at this point, and I still have the dream of wanting to go to Vegas. So, you know, the two, there was really a crossroads there where I had to kind of pick one or the other, and I chose to kind of go on with the Vegas show and did that and realized my dream, and it was a hit show here, and it ran, and it was great. And now I'm back here going, you know what, I had such a great head start, and now the internet's here, and LinkedIn, and Facebook, and I can reach the people who kind of want to learn what I know. And so They Laugh You Win was born, and basically I took all the three specialties I have in my life. One is being able to teach this to, now I don't teach comedy people anymore, but I can teach this to business professionals. And amazing now how humor, and this is what I'm really excited about, is that humor now is a skill in the business world is totally accepted. I mean, 10 years ago, it was still kind of like, oh, okay, we understand that it can help with public speaking or this or that. But now, because people's attention spans have gotten so short and you really have to engage them right away, humor is now this huge thing. And also, it turns out, something that you and I have always known, you know, people who are funny are usually smarter because, you know what, it's all we are wordsmiths and we're able to put this thing together. And so there are a lot of attractive things. So They Laugh You Win became a corporate training company. And then I really have taken one of the things that I've done over 6,000 shows, and I'd say half of those shows were not in comedy clubs. They were either in VFWs or Moose Lodges or, you know, three prisons. I've done three prisons in my life. I mean, so I can do the show anywhere. So I found the trade show space is really lacking. I mean, right now, in order to get people into their booth, you know, they'll have a magician out there or a juggler or a spokesman with big boobs. And I'm like, oh, now you got a comedian with big boobs. But I really found that I cracked the code to helping businesses with this trade show. And again, under this simple thing, when you make people laugh, your business or you're going to win. So, and now that's my full focus and my full passion is training people, you know, on the thing that we know and how to apply it. I mean, you know, it's not like that Chris Rock and I both know the same things about stand-up. What he doesn't know is how to teach it to people. And I spent a lot of time figuring out how to teach it to people. And that's where we are now. And I'm just having a ball with it. And, you know, but the timing was right. Even 10 years ago, I didn't think of what this could become. And you know, today, you know, a guy hit me up and wants to know if I want to go to Japan. Nobody ever asked me to go to Japan with comedy. But with business, you know, I'm going to be able to see the world and actually make a difference. Because one thing, 10 years ago, public speaking was people's number one fear. 10 years later, it's still people's number one fear. I mean, we've got to, you know, I'd rather help them with their health full time. But if I could just help people get out of their own way and be more successful. And, you know, one thing, a lot of, you know, I open up the seminar and I talk about how comedians are painfully shy. Most people, we develop this humor as a defense mechanism. You know, I mean, I grew up in New York City, a little chubby kid. I had two options, learn how to fight or learn how to be funny. Fighting you're not good at right away, you know, so I had to learn how to be funny. And but a lot of people, it was that. It was a defense mechanism, but most of us painfully shy. And, you know, I mean, Chris Rock, painfully shy. Drew Carey, painfully shy in real life, you know. And I have stories in my seminar. And that really opens people up and makes it now something tangible because most of them think they were going to live with this fear of public speaking forever. Like, that's how they were born. And it is something, a switch that you can turn on and off and use to your advantage. I close every seminar where I talk about how I've gotten out of 12 speeding tickets over the last 29 years. Because that's just a public speaking situation. Probably the shittiest public speaking situation, but that's all it is. Taking a negative situation, turn it into a positive. Using body language to put your audience at ease, you know, and, you know, reading an audience. And, you know, so I go through this whole kind of thing at the end about that. But, and if nothing else, it's going to help make that experience a little bit better. So, you know, I'm really excited about it. But that's, you know, if you have specific questions about it, that's the big...
No, that's awesome. That is awesome. I mean, that's really awesome. I mean, it sounds like a great idea. And I could definitely see it working. So, and who better to do it than a nice guy that loves to help people, who's hysterical. I mean, every component's there. That's wonderful.
Yeah, we hope. Yeah, I mean, unless World War III breaks out, I don't see how this doesn't work. And the winds here have been so nice. You know, I mean, there's only so much. You know, the comedy show business world is so exploitive. And, you know, Hunter S. Thompson said of Hollywood, it's a plastic hallway full of pimps, thieves, and whores where good men die like dogs. There's also a negative side, you know. And look at the Harvey Weinstein thing. Why would anybody want to be in business and associated with these people? He's not the only one. This is a horrible town that is just, you know, it's controlled by a certain number of people, and you know, and they're just trying to exploit you. And the comedy club, you know, is the same situation. So then I kind of find this business world where they kind of need what I want and are appreciative of it and value you. And it's been really fantastic.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, isn't it? And I'm telling you, I have a little bit of, you know, being in business so many years and being around different kinds of seminars and stuff, you know, I've seen different people do these seminars in different ways. And I have to tell you that I think, you know, you should definitely call me during the week privately, because I know people who go out and do these kind of things,
and not
the way you're doing it, but I could probably hook you up with somebody that might be able to get you involved with some people right away, because it's a different idea. But I have a friend that's real big with Amway people, and they're always looking for a way to engage their people. I have a friend that runs a giant insurance company, and they're always having seminars and stuff.
Insurance is definitely one that, you know, I have three programs. One is called that CAN kind of program. One is called Stand Up and Public Speak, and that's where I just teach the tools of stand-up, the tools of stand-up comedy, and, you know, and how it applies to public speaking. Then I have one called Stand Up and Sell, which is treating the sales situation as a performance. And it really is now, because, you know, I pitched one of the strip properties here about giving humor training to their front desk people and their concierges and the blackjack dealers and everyone else. Because when people come there, you're not a blackjack dealer today. You're playing the role of a blackjack dealer. I mean, that casino floor is a set. I mean, if you think that's a job, you know, it isn't. I mean, they come here with a determined set of expectations, and you better at least meet or exceed those. Otherwise, you know, and then the data behind all this is amazing. You know, kids laugh 400 times a day, adults laugh 3 times a day. You think about the number of interactions that you have over the course of a day, and you know, if you could wrap your brand's message in humor, or if you're the one guy trying to sell, you know, I've been working with car dealers lately, and the thing is, they got to buy that car from somebody. And I tell everyone, if in case of a tie, the funnier person is going to win. You know, I've never not gotten an upgrade. I mean, you know this too. You wielded the power of humor to get what you want. I mean, you know, I mean, this is probably how you got on that cartoon, you know. And I don't know if this is the guy that you're working with over there, but, you know, people do business with people they like, and humor goes a long way to being able to do
that. Well, of course, that's how I got the cartoon. The guy needed somebody funny to write. But, you know, I'll just tell you, I'll just back you up. I mean, when I came back to Florida, which I had to do because my kids were here, I had to stop what I was doing in New York, come back to Florida, and, you know, I had to find something to feed my kids, right? So I went into real estate. So, of course, real estate's a very serious business, you know. People are giving you money, and not giving it to you personally, but they're taking their money, and they're trusting you to help them buy a house. That's a big deal, right? And I take it very seriously, right, Matt? But, okay, I can't tell no jokes. I can't say nothing on Facebook that people might find Mike Boyle saying anything. And for like 3 years, I shut down, dude. Shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a realtor now. I'm straight-laced. Dude, I was sucking fucking wind. Sucking wind. And I'm telling you, my life was not good, Matt. You know, and I have a glorious life. But, you know, I was trying to be Mr. Straight-Laced Realtor. And then finally, I said, you know what? I don't give a fuck. I don't care. And about a year ago, I started saying, no, I'm not. I am who I am. And if you want to buy a house with a great guy anyway, fine. And I started cracking my jokes again on Facebook. And I started to, you know, dude, I'm fucking selling a house to everybody I look at now. And,
of course.
And if you look me up on Zillow, dude, all my reviews talk like this. I love Mike Boyle. This guy is great. We love, because you know what, dude? I'm joyful. I don't have to hide my humor. I use it exactly like you're saying. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it is 100% the truth. 100% the truth.
And, you know, they have to learn. And even in the things I teach people, where laughter comes from, that was one of the great things about having my father, like, behind me the whole time, is that, you know, I've learned things that we know, you know, intuitively as comedians, but may not know where it comes from. But people only laugh for two reasons. They only laugh out of superiority, or they only laugh out of commonality. And the superiority one is the one that gets people into trouble. But even identifying that, you know, if there's a victim in the joke, it better be you. And even in that case, it's not necessarily good for the business world. But what is really powerful is commonality, is finding what do these people have in common, what do you have in common with them, what does the home buying experience have in common, or the car buying experience, or the insurance buying experience. And, you know, and those kind of things, like I said, if you can be funnier and you know, more likable and all this kind of stuff, they're going to want to do business with you. And even with learning, you know, it's like people remember 10%, only 10% of what they hear. But if you wrap that message in humor, it goes up to 50 or 60%. So, you know, it's only in your best interest to try to do it. And, you know, and a lot of people don't think they have a sense of humor, and which is nuts, because it's put into us for a reason. I mean, it's how we deal with stress and life, and which could be, you know, all the political correctness going on now. And plus, I'm kind of glad that I'm in the corporate world doing this now, because I really don't even know how you do stand-up anymore. I mean, you basically have to pick a side. But in the comedy club, you know, it's going to be 50-50, red and blue. So, you know, you could be fighting people every single night. Half the audience, they'll turn on each other. So, you know, this is a very happy place, you know, that I'm in right now. Just not having to be out there in this political climate trying to tell jokes. You know, they're just jokes, people are taking them way too seriously now.
Right, Mark, did you want to say something? Mark's over here signaling me. What's going on,
Mark? Ask you a question about the Jews. Let me ask you a question, all right?
Listen. Yes, sir.
You listen to me there? Listen. I have the gout. What kind of vegetable thing do you do when a person has... I'm sorry, I'm being attacked by my grandfather's ghost. And I'm taking prednisone right now.
Yeah. No, gout is, I mean, uric acid, I mean, they're definitely,
exactly.
You know,
what would you say is a holistic cure?
Ginger, turmeric work, because turmeric especially, because what it does is it makes the body less inflamed. So, you know, that's the problem.
Right.
You have some inflammation there in your joints, and it's very painful. I'm sorry, but, you know, it's a very Jewish thing. I think literally every man in my family has had the gout. So, you know, what you want to do is get the body more alkaline. Now, a lot of times gout comes with thyroid problems. Do you have any thyroid problems?
No.
Okay, good. So kale works. But the only thing is, people have thyroid problems. Kale kind of messes with thyroid function.
No, I heard that, yeah. But
Yeah. But I'd say, you know, if you just – and you don't even have to make the whole juice. The thing about – and get – there are tablets out there, and I'm kind of still working with supplement companies. The problem is with all these supplements is that – you don't know how much of it is turmeric, you know. I mean, they did a study here, and they found out that most of the cinnamon in this country, half of what's in the cinnamon is sawdust, you know, because cinnamon's expensive. Sawdust isn't. Olive oil, you can't even buy olive oil in this country anymore because most of it is a fugazi version. Yeah, about 80% of it could be canola oil. I mean, you know, it's just, it's nuts.
Green even a virgin?
Even extra virgin, yeah, it doesn't matter because there's just nobody policing them, you know. I mean, other than the people who go and just do these studies and find out, but nobody's doing that. Green tea. Sometimes it's not green tea. It's lawn clippings in there, you know. So
really,
so I go right to the source. So I juice the turmeric root and ginger root, both of those on their own. So, you know, I think every day if you just went to Whole Foods, got some turmeric root, and you could either throw that in the thing, but that's going to work. And what you really need to do is try to get your body. Something is making, and I don't know what the total diet is. It could be refined sugar. It could be a bunch of things. But you want to get your body back to an alkaline state because then there's no inflammation inside and that sort of thing. So it's not. So I think in your case, it's two things. One, you could benefit from really taking a look at the diet and go, I'm going to shift these things and replace them with, you know, I always say try and make every calorie have a purpose. And if you do that, then, you know, just from a nutritional standpoint, I don't even look at food. That's why people go, well, don't you want to eat a pizza? Pizza has zero nutrition. I mean, that, and then people go, well, isn't it expensive? I go, think about how much you're overpaying for the food that has no nutrition. Kale is a bargain, even at $2.99 for 7 leaves. It's a bargain because the amount of nutrition that's in kale is way more than that $50 steak you bought at Morton's. There's literally nothing. And steak used to have nutrition in it because the cow would eat the grass. Then we kill the cow, and the only nutrition we would get is from the grass. It has nothing to do with the cow. And now cows don't even go outside. Most of them never see grass. They have a hole cut in their stomach. They pump them full of some kind of glue, and disgusting. So, you know, that's the thing is that once I tell people, I go, you can't go back. It's really easy. This way is really, really easy once you learn, you know, the truth about all this stuff. And you have to accept that everything that we know about food has been a lie, you know. And and so you may also have a high fat intake that could be triggering the uric acid.
Well, what you said about the Jewish people, I mean, you know, I live in Manhattan. So, I mean, all the delis, all the stuff, you know, it's true. And I'm eating better than I used to. But, yeah, all that stuff is still there.
Yeah. No, and trust me, it's good. I mean, you know, it's but there are so many ways. My wife has actually become this amazing plant-based cook. But, you know, there's a documentary that we watched first called Forks Over Knives. And they talk about something called the China Study, which, you know, for all the problems with China and the problems with communism and all that, they actually care more about the health of their people than we
really
will in this country. Oh, my gosh. Because if a billion and a half of them get so sick that they revolt, you know, I mean, so they did a study of all of China. And the great thing about that is everybody in the study is the same genetic background. So,
right.
You know, they're all Chinese. So places where they ate meat and drank milk and lived the way we did, eating processed foods, high amounts of cancer, high amounts of heart disease, high amounts of all the diabetes. Places where they didn't, none of this. Like literally nothing. There is no disease in Papua New Guinea because they only eat this organic plant-based food that lives there. And they don't have any of this disease. So, you know, it also is what you want out of life. Like you're a successful business. And, you know, the thing is every billionaire I've met eats this way because they want to live the rest of their life so they can spend their money and do great things and enjoy life. And everyone else who wants to live for instant gratification, I go, the biggest problem is in our life is that we have taste buds because we've found ways to jerk off our mouths for this little instant gratification, 3 seconds of pleasure. But once it gets to your throat, it's no longer can do anything good for you. So, you know, these other things, why not eat things that can, you know, not only reverse disease, but, you know, can keep you going. I mean, I have more energy now than I did before. I mean, I'm sure you guys can hear that in my voice. But but you have to make the choice that this is what I want and get in front of it. Now, that may be when you're 60, maybe when you're 70, who knows. But when you're laying there at the end, you know, you'll look back and go, you know, this, and I'm working with people on hospice now, which you're not supposed to try anything. You're just supposed to sit there and wait for it. But I watched my mother on hospice for a year, and the Meals on Wheels would bring her a bologna sandwich and something. And it's like, you know, that isn't the cause of her sickness, but it certainly isn't the cure. And I had no idea about this, and I could have saved her. I mean, she died of congestive heart failure, and I could have reversed the heart disease. I could have cured her. And you know, I say I can't save my mom, but I can save a hell of a lot of other moms that are out
there.
That's
great.
I'll send you my recipe, and you know, we'll knock that gout out because gout's an easy one. Gout's a really easy one.
Great.
Where do you get the turmeric from? Because my shoulders hurt. Fucking kill me! I can't even land on my side.
You can get it at Whole Foods, has it? I mean, you know, it's turmeric is and it's amazing because it's just this little root that probably in Bangladesh or India or whatever you're paying about 13 cents a pound for it. Here it's about $13 a pound. Same thing with kale. Like it's $3 for one bunch of kale. When we were kids, you wouldn't be able to walk out of the store with $3 of kale. It would take a truck, you know. So, but you know, they have it at Whole Foods or any one of these organic places, but like I said, try to do it with you can make tea out of the roots, you can do a bunch of things, but if there was a pill out there or powder that I really trusted, I would say go for it. But, you know, it's, and then, you know, then we get some other stuff, spirulina, kelp, those kind of things are really good too. You want to get some of your nutrition from the sea, you know, from the ocean, because that's what fish, everyone goes, oh, fish is healthy for you. No, fish just eat better than we do, and we eat the fish to get the nutrition from the things that they ate. So, yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Fucking guy. I told you, Mark, that he was going to be a great guest. Me and Mark talked a couple of days before the show when we were going to have somebody on. I said, I'm really excited about Matt coming on. He's a great guy. You know, comedy's awesome when somebody's funny, but you're the whole package, dude. You're a business guy. You care about people. You got... dude, your daughter, I smile every time I see a picture of that kid. What a little beautiful little kid.
She's amazing. She's amazing. She's a miracle baby too. You know, I mean, she's every day I look at her, it just we actually her middle name is Tulip, and that's what we call her, Tulip. But her first name is Kayla, and we named her after Kale because I spent so much time in my life just being beholden to food and I didn't even know how to feed myself. And it was it caused me so many problems in my life and so many opportunities. I remember, you know, just because my health was such an issue. And I never want her to experience a day of that. And, you know, and I'd love to be able to, like I said, I'd love to be able to go out and help other people. But the only ones that listen are the ones that are dying. But the thing is, most of us are dying,
sure,
you know,
desperate.
You know, but the desperate ones will listen. So it is really, you know, That's okay. I'll help the dying people. But what you want to do is just help people before that happens. And that is a total challenge because the brainwashing. I mean, coming from an entertainment background, I know why they live the way they do. You know, even with soda, when I tell people that, you know, they don't know who they are without soda. I mean, they drank soda their whole life.
What about seltzer? Or just
seltzer's fine. Seltzer's fine. Yeah, it's not the gas that's the problem. It's the chemicals and the sugar.
Right.
So, no, seltzer's fine. Seltzer's totally fine. And you know what? Throw some strawberries in the seltzer, something like that.
Right,
this isn't about like depriving yourself. It is actually the opposite. It's about giving your body everything it needs. Think about the strawberry ice cream. The strawberry ice cream is trying to taste like strawberries, but strawberries cost money, so they use chemicals to make it taste
right.
like strawberries. But if you eat the actual strawberries with some frozen bananas, I make this frozen banana ice cream, you would never go back to the other one. Never. I mean, it's amazing. And you know, there's just a certain set of rules, but basically you can eat anything. And it isn't even about, it's about health. Like I had a woman, she kind of heard me kind of talking to somebody else, and a real guy like me finds the answer, and which is why, you know, there's some value here to me being able to share with other people. This isn't about being a swimsuit model. This is about I was dying and now I'm not. I had diabetes and now I don't. This is health, not fitness. I mean, you know, you could push a tire and you know, throw force at the body, but eventually the bills for the force that you put on your body, those bills have to be paid with joint pain or you're going to pull something. And then once you stop throwing force at it, bam, you're going to gain the weight back because you never really solved the real problem, which was I have to get healthy. And then, you know, what do you want to be? If you want to be a badass cross-training accountant, go knock yourself out. But understand that stress on your joints, 80% of health is nutrition. So, you know, we all what we eat, for sure.
Wow. What an awesome conversation. I'm going to tell you, Matt, I wish you all the luck in the world with your endeavor, with that thing, and with your family. I'm so glad that you got your health going again. Because I will tell you this, we stood out by the merch table after your show, and I did notice that you were like, you see, you had a heart attack 3 months later, and I believe it. You were like very winded and
sweating. I'm in Florida too. I'm in South Florida too. That's not a good place for chubby people. You know.
Yeah. No, and I noticed you were very winded, and it was very difficult for you to stand out there. And I said, you know, I got to give the guy credit though, because he went out and he put a great show on and you didn't let it stop you. You know what I mean?
No.
But then 3 months later, you had a heart attack and God forbid.
And that was the thing is that I was never going to get to Vegas because Vegas, I did 400 shows a year. I mean, remember, I couldn't put my socks or shoes on when this originally happened. There was no way I was going to be. And it was affecting the performance. That's why Alonzo Bode, it was last comic standing. I can't remember. It's funny how like you guys was trying to get it. I'm sitting here on a hold going, last comic standing. So he won last comic standing. But that's like my best friend in this business, in life at all. I mean, Alonzo gave his brother a kidney. You know, I was up there when he did that. I mean, this is an amazing, great guy. And when I physically was having, you know, health problems and I knew, you know, he just said, come on the road with me. And you know, I'm doing shorter sets. So, you know, it's you know, when you got to close and do, you know, eight shows a week, you know, we just lost Ralphie May. I mean, you know, I mean, I have a documentary I want to do called Dying Laughing. And I really want to go out because comedians are the most unhealthy people on the planet. And if people always think to me, they go, I mean, think just because of lifestyle. First of all, no comedian ever really wants to live long life. Like we live totally in the moment. So we never think about that part of it. And funny lives in a place in the brain most people want to go. And in there lives addiction and self-destruction and all that kind of stuff. So a lot of us, you know, some of us kill ourselves with food and alcohol or drugs or women or whatever it is. So we just lost Ralphie May, and the thing is, Ralphie was here in Vegas doing a show, and I could have saved Ralphie. I mean, literally, this could save, I could save anyone. I mean, you know, and so one of these days we'll go out there. But that was the great thing about Alonzo is, you know, when I couldn't anymore, you know, when you know, you're weak, your friends pick you up, and, you know, it was easy because I'm in front of his audiences, you know, and I'm middling, so, you know, I'm doing 30 minutes. But it, until I figured it out health-wise, you know, that was going to be my reality. I really didn't know what I was going to do because it really was – it's funny that you mentioned that because it was affecting the performance. And this – it made me better, and now I'm able to go and – you know, maybe to, you know, be a pioneer in the humor industry and be the, you know, out in the forefront to do it. None of this, my reality before was a very dark one. And I was dying. And there's a real, I'll let you guys go in a second, but there's a really weird connection between the mind and body. We think the body can talk because in our heads we have this inner monologue. But the only thing the body can do is send messages to the brain. One is feed me because it hopes that you're going to send down there something good. It doesn't, you know. So I used to think I was a glutton. Why am I always hungry? Why am I always eating? Because I was dying, and the only way that I could heal myself was the body was hopefully thinking I would send something down there that it could use. But it also sends some real hopeless, dark, painful messages to the brain, and there's just no joy. And now there's nothing but joy, and not in a way that, you know, I'm, you know, and my joy now is in sharing with other people. So, you know, you know, it's amazing when reality changes, you know, anything is possible.
You sound so fucking happy. It's awesome. It's so awesome to talk to somebody like you. You know,
well,
and of
cool
course,
people, so.
No, of course I never got to meet Ralphie May. But I was very sad when he died because anybody talented like that and too young, very, very young, but,
He's got two kids.
Yeah, and a very gifted comedian. But I do know people who did know him, and the general consensus was that he was a very nice guy.
Sweet guy, very amazing guy. Yeah, amazing guy.
Yeah, but the thing that got me the day he did pass away was that, you know, of course, what people had to keep talking about was his weight.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like, I just want to read what I put on Facebook because, you know, we got like 4,500 people.
And I'll tell you
Facebook.
This, not to cut you off, but skinny people die every single day. That's
yeah,
the thing
yeah.
that people have to understand. So, health versus fitness. Skinny people die every single day, sometimes more than the overweight people, trust me.
So excuse my language.
I saw that happen.
Because you're a nice guy, but let me just tell you what I wrote about Ralphie. I wrote this when he died. I wrote, "Rest in peace, Ralphie May. You were a supremely talented man. I'm really sorry that everyone has to keep talking about how fat you were, Ralphie. I guess they figure we all didn't know it. You know, Ralphie, no thin people ever fucking die. They are immortal. Only us fat fucking slobs die, Ralphie. Well, save me a spot next to Michael Jackson and Prince. Wait, those motherfuckers weren't fat. Never mind. Rest in peace, Ralphie. You were fucking awesome." You know, because the truth is, like, look, of course the guy was fat. But could we just say on the day the guy passed away, could we just say rest in peace?
Right, right.
Do we have
yeah,
to keep
yeah.
talking about he died because he was fat? When a skinny
yeah.
guy dies, do we say that he died because he was skinny? You know, we're getting to be such cynical people on this planet. It's disgusting. You know, why not say he died because he was, you know, yeah, he died young, but, you know, Michael Jackson was young. Prince was relatively young.
Well, that was a whole different deal, but
yeah.
Mark, I'm talking.
Well, that's the other thing. That's it, and that should be the wake-up call. That, you know, what is that? Those guys died from medication, from you know, pharmaceutical medication. You know, now was Ralphie unhealthy? And the thing is, it's weird because John Panette passed too, and it was. It was kind of similar ages, and it was also here in Las Vegas. Once Ralphie got the show here, I really knew that probably, you know, I didn't realize it would happen so quickly, but I knew that when, because now, before the traveling and stuff, like, Ralphie had to kind of hold it together a little bit just so he could get to the gigs. But then once you take the travel out of the equation, I mean, then it started to get hard for him just even to get to the show. And you know, he went through a divorce, so it's a dark thing. But, you know, everyone, when things like this happen, they think, you know, they got to make some political statements, you know, about, you know, instead of just saying, hey, listen, just a great guy died. But every time, like even when Hugh Hefner, I did it only because when Hugh Hefner died, everybody is out there celebrating Hugh Hefner. And I'm like, this guy's a pornographer. Like we got to get our fucking morals and values straight here. And they go, well, he was a champion for free speech. Of course he was, because he was a pornographer. He's got to be a champion of free speech. And then I've been vindicated because with this Harvey Weinstein story, it's coming out that Hef was not a good guy. He kept these women prisoners. He abused them. Two of Bill Cosby's rapes happened at the Playboy Mansion. God knows how many else. God knows how many women Harvey Weinstein raped at the Playboy Mansion. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, everything now is the news cycle, and people don't think anymore. All they're doing is regurgitating somebody else's opinion because they want to be connected with each other, and you got to come to the party with an opinion. And, you know, forming an opinion is hard work, as you know. I mean, that's why comedians are great at it, because we spend the whole life coming up with an opinion.
Well, I think Harvey Weinstein, I think listen, Matt, you're probably going to get mad when I say this. I feel like this. If somebody rapes you, you need to run to the police immediately and scream bloody murder till they're in jail. You know, you can't say, well, somebody was victimized me, but they gave me a part in a movie, so I shut my mouth for 10 years. I mean, I don't understand that whole concept. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, these people were sitting at parties with this guy at the Oscar parties and saying he was a wonderful man. And then when it became okay to talk about it, now there's like this avalanche. You know, I just don't understand that. And I am dead set against touching anybody against their will. Anybody. I do not. I'm very into personal.
That's big of you. You know, Mike, that's big of you. A lot of people don't know that about you, but that's big. That you're willing to go out on a limb and go, nobody should be touched against their will. I love that about you.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, Matt. But come on. It's like, listen, you know, if you rape me, I'm running to the cops. You know what I mean? So I just don't understand this. Like 10 years later, there was 100 rapes. Like it makes it hard to understand, you know? But, okay, whatever.
Well, I get it. I'll tell you a story that'll kind of make you a little bit that is that when I got my show here in Vegas, I had a 3-year deal, and we were about, 18, 19 months into the deal. And casino said, well, we're shutting down in 2 months. You know, you're going to have to pack up. And I go, well, I have this deal. I invested money, all this other kind of stuff. I go, well, what are my repercussions? They go, if you sue us, you will never work in this town again.
Right.
And it was real. I mean, it was real. I mean, there was a shitty little place like the Riviera. It wasn't Miramax, you know? So, you know, I kind of get that point. But this whole Me Too thing, I mean, you know, it's weird to me, too. And I believe me, I'm with you. I got a daughter. I would never want this to happen to her. But people are acting like they're so shocked that a man of power, now it came out to the original Bush did it, and this Clinton. This is what men in power do. I mean, this is what they do. I mean, I'm shocked.
No, but
when it doesn't happen.
But,
you know?
but women in power do it too.
That's what it is. It's power. It's power. It's absolutely power. But
when I was young, I had a termite company. Very young, I owned a termite company, and there was a property manager, and she ran a couple buildings, and they were giving me work. And, you know, she came up to me and she told me, look, you want any more work in here? And she fucking hiked her skirt up, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. And I'm going to tell you something. I was not into her.
Should have checked it for termites. Should have checked it.
No, no, no. And Matt, I'm going to tell you something. She was not my type at all. At all.
Yeah.
And luckily for me, I didn't give a fuck about her work. But you know what I mean? I was like, you know, I don't give a fuck if you give me any more jobs or not. But, you know, like, it's not like the only thing. It's not like the – and there was a couple other things that happened to me like that too. It's not like – but, okay, now I'm not saying I was a victim like a rape. I honestly, Matt, I would shoot a guy in the face if you gave me license to do it. If I saw somebody hit a woman and rape her. And you said, you showed it to me on video, and you said, "Here, Mike, here's the gun. You're allowed to kill him." I would kill him. If you can't get your fucking rocks off in this world without hurting somebody to do it, you don't need to be here.
Yeah.
And I feel here's my views, and I've said it 1,000 times. My views on sex are this. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you're gay. That's fine with me. I have gay friends all over the place. I don't care. As long as you don't touch children, don't touch fucking kids around. If I hear you touch a kid, I will destroy you. And as long as you don't force anybody to do anything, and as long as you don't cheat on a good person. If you cheat on a good person, I have no respect for you. Anything else, if everybody else everybody in the room wants to be in the room and you're not forcing nobody and everybody's of age, do whatever the fuck you want. I don't judge you.
Have at it, yeah.
Exactly.
Man,
there's so much shit that you could do to get your rocks off that if you got to hurt somebody to do it, you don't need to be – you. You don't need to be on this planet. So I am not in any way advocating hurting people. But, you know, I just don't understand taking – you know, like I used to do a lot of stand-up in New York, Matt. And all my black comedian friends, like we get off the stage or we do the New York Comedy Club or something, and we walk down the street. Mark, you're probably there sometimes, right? And they would all be a little jealous because I got some more laughs than they would get. And you remember, like, one of them would go, "Man, you're going to blow up because you're white and you gay." And I go, "Gay? What the fuck are you talking about?" And they go, "Because you're going to let the Illuminati fuck you in the ass and give you a TV show."
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that whole thing. Yeah, about the Illuminati having sex with people to give them. And you said, "Look, you said I'd let them do it if it was a big enough job."
Exactly, Matt. Yeah. I said, I remember this one night, a bunch of them were telling me that I was gay and I was going to get fucked in the ass for a TV show. And I said, "You know what, motherfucker? If you know somebody fucked me in the ass tonight for $10 million TV deal, take me there right now, and I'll gladly let them fuck me in the ass, because you'd probably take me in the ass right now for a pack of cigarettes, you dumb motherfucker." So what I'm telling you is if I took you in the ass for a $10 million TV deal, I wouldn't say they raped me 20 years later. I would just say, you know, whatever, I did what I did. But you know what I mean?
It's business. Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, I don't want to get fucked in the ass for a $10 million TV deal. But if it's the only way I could do it, and I did it, I wouldn't go saying the guy raped me 20 years later. Mm-hmm. I'm saying some of these Harvey Weinstein girls, I'm telling you, they fucked around with that guy to get something off him, and now they're just claiming that he I'm not saying all of them.
Yeah.
No, certainly.
And then I'm sure the Bill Cosby thing. I mean, when they say, "Oh, you know, he raped me," they all did quaaludes and had sex then. You know, I mean, you passed out maybe before the thing got started and he continued, but you knew. I mean, a lot of times, I'm not saying all of them, again, not all of them, but a lot of times people back then just did quaaludes and had sex. And now they're coming back and saying he raped me. You know, it almost, again, with this or even with the Black Lives Matter, it's almost the people in the process are not helping the cause. I mean, you know, like it's other women, like, it's going to be Halloween this weekend, and they'll go out there wearing dental floss, and then they'll be, you know, like that doesn't have anything to do with it, you know? I mean, pornography, that's what, you know, there's no such thing as sex addicts. What it is Harvey Weinstein watched too much porno, and he thinks that's the real world. That's how you treat women. He has no respect for women. If women, we have to find a way to respect women again, and that's the problem. It's not just a, you know, bunch of people. 1,000 people would come out and say Harvey Weinstein did it. We get it. That doesn't matter. But how do we fix the actual problem, which is why, you know, Trump thinks you can grab it, you know? And Trump's not saying he can grab your grandmother's pussy. He said he can grab some woman that he bought a couch, a $100,000 couch for. He thinks he can grab her pussy, and he might be right. Because that's why she showed up to get the $100,000 couch.
You know? I think what Trump was talking about was there is a certain segment of the population that they will allow it. I don't think he was talking.
No, of course not. He's talking about gold diggers that date billionaires or hang around. I used to hang around with a lot of baseball players, and I see them 6-7 deep waiting at the bar to have sex with a married man. Roger Clemens was famous for this. I remember when he was chasing 300, he'd be flying around with his wife and his family and then, you know, go to the hotel and there'd be like 6 women. And I would ask some of my buddies, I go, "Why can't we go talk to them?" They go, "Oh, they belong to Roger." And, you know, this is how it is. And, you know, I mean, but it's not like the women are doing anything to help themselves. You know, these are six women that are creating the problem for other women. You know, the men are the end. You know, so
that's where
listen.
That's what I call it, a witch hunt, because back in Salem, Massachusetts, you know, they went crazy and they started like chasing every woman. You know, it becomes a fetish, and so now everybody, you know. But I'm sure he did it with some, but I'm sure a lot, like you say, are just jumping on the bandwagon. And you know what? It makes it look bad for the ones who really got raped.
Absolutely.
I don't think a guy like that has to rape anybody. I think he's got enough power, enough money, where he could get his fucking, unless he's a demented motherfucker. I think he's got enough power.
Well, he probably was.
He wants
that part of it, and no social skills. Remember, he didn't know he was going to become Harvey Weinstein. You know, I meet a lot of rich, successful guys, and then the first thing the guy, you know, is that they get rid of their wives, you know, because they never thought they were going to be able to get laid like this and this easily. So they're like, go and do it, because they're guys, and that's, you know, it's built into our DNA, and unless you fight it and overcome it, you know, our animal instincts will take over. But, you know, I literally see it all the time, and then it becomes so twisted because, you know, he becomes a deviant, you know, I mean, out of this whole kind of thing, you know, I mean, it's I don't know why he couldn't just, that's what we equate with success, is that now, and then believe me, in sports it's the case, that you are now, it becomes how you're, you know, forget about your stats on the field. It's your stats off the field that determine your success, you know. And, you know, that's just, we've got to solve the real problem. At least start having conversations about what the problem is instead of just this, you know, news cycle, you know. Because in 2 weeks, nobody's going to be talking about Harvey Weinstein anymore. And that's why the problem never gets solved, because something else is going to happen and we're going to figure it out.
I'm waiting for the gay version of this. When some young actor comes
out. Absolutely. Johnny Depp or Keanu Reeves, all the stories that we've heard. Yeah, yeah.
Because they always talk about. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think that the thing is that we all have to find a little more love in our hearts for other human beings. I mean, and really, there hasn't been a lot out there. And all this fighting that we're doing every day over who hates Trump and who doesn't hate Trump, I think it's all disgusting. We're growing further and further apart. That's why it's easier to hurt each other, because when you could call the president of the United States a scumbag every day, who's not a scumbag anymore? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like your president's a scumbag. So it's easy to look at your fellow human being as a scumbag. I remember the president was revered by everybody. Didn't matter if you voted him for him or not. He was the president of the United States. And so we've come to a point in this country where nobody's revered anymore, not even our own president. And so who's revered? How are you going to revere a woman?
That started with Nixon.
It didn't start with Nixon. When I was a kid, I remember the first president I really remember was Jimmy Carter. And I remember when Jimmy Carter lost the election to Ronald Reagan, I cried because my president lost. You know what I mean? Like, he was the president of the United States. I didn't understand Republican or Democrat. I understood was this was the president of the United States. And I remember he was standing there talking about that he lost. And I was weeping. I was a little kid. I was too young to vote. And then when Ronald Reagan won, he was, he was the Antichrist. I remember that. He was going to blow up the world, and he was going to make the Russians bomb us, and he did movies with a monkey. If you remember that, he was an actor, and he was going to blow up the world. He was going to ruin everything. And of course, he didn't do a bad job, right? But then, you know, I think Reagan was really the beginning of the country really splintering, because everybody hated him so bad. And then okay. It's just like, you know, and of course, when George Bush won, he stole the election, and that was really the beginning of the end. And then when Barack Obama won for two terms, we thought everything was going to be okay because, you know, Barack Obama won. Everybody seemed to be happy on that side, and they were quiet for 8 years because they won. And then when they lost, now it's like all fucking hell it broke loose again. What are we going to do in this country? It's like, you know,
we got to fix the actual problems. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Nixon and you're talking about those things. Is that Edward R. Murrow predicted this. Once we no longer have news, because Walter Cronkite wouldn't be talking shit about Trump. He would just be reporting the news, the actual facts, and then we would just go from that, you know. But now there's, you know, half the news media outlets. He's not wrong about a lot of those things. But if you go back and you look at stuff that Edward R. Murrow said, you know, and this was in the late 50s, you know, early 60s, that, you know, once we no longer have news, you know, then stuff like this is going to happen because they can now manipulate you, you know, and it is shocking. However, you know, I'm shocked in a lot of the way we live now. You know, I mean, I'm raising Tulip, you know, very old school way. Tulip doesn't have any devices. She paints, she draws, she sculpts, she reads, she paints. It's none of these new things because, you know, I think that there's no track record on how any of this stuff is going to, what kind of humans we're creating. But I know how I grew up, and I know how, you know, and I feel pretty good about, you know, the things that I have, work ethic, creativity, self-reliance, you know, and people are just out there, and now it's just about sound bites and, you know, picking the side that you're on, and I don't know where we go from this, but,
let's hope, Matt, that we all come to our senses a little bit, and that people like you and me, and we can keep some people laughing, and this is why I love life. I mean, I, you know, the little bit of stuff that I could do to just try to be a little bit cheerful, and I know you get to talk to very awesome people like you, it just makes life so incredible. I'm so glad you're able to come on tonight and talk to us for some time. And I hope me and you can stay friends, brother. You're a very special human being.
Absolutely. Hey, write me a character in that cartoon. I'd love to just be, I don't know, an angry squirrel or something. I don't know.
Absolutely. Have you watched any of them?
I haven't. You know, when we talked yesterday, I was meaning to, and then, you know, with a three-year-old, it's like, I was going to do something. Oh, now she's on top of the refrigerator. So, definitely going to check it out. I'm definitely going to check it out
I'll send you a link. You know, I definitely want your honest opinion, what you think of the writing, and because that would mean a lot to me. But I'll send you a link. I'll text you a link. And
yeah.
They're
only 3 minutes long, right? It'd be hard to fuck up 3 minutes. I'm sure.
Question about your daughter.
Yeah.
When your daughter's out and she goes to school and the kids are eating candy and stuff, what is she?
Yeah.
Does she like stick to your diet or does she like
cheat? No. The amazing thing is she's only lived this way and hasn't been brainwashed. So it's the beautiful thing that warms my heart is that we go to parties and things like that. She's going to a birthday party on Saturday. She doesn't even recognize the other food as food, like the little goldfish crackers or whatever. She thinks it's a toy.
Right.
Like she thinks mushrooms and kale and cucumbers and tomatoes, this is food. And then when we tell her, like, oh, that cake has, animal milk in it and we don't eat, you know, cow milk. But mommy brought you a piece of her cake and, you know, she's cool with it because she kind of gets it and and believe me, when we go through this whole process, I mean, one thing, we are vegans. I mean, whether people want to believe that or not, we can eat meat. And trust me, if it was for survival, I think I'd buy that YouTube. But, you know, you think about our teeth. Look at our teeth. Look at a horse's teeth, a cow's teeth. They're exactly the same. Both of those animals are vegans, and we ride them and have them pull us in the wagons. Also, our bodies predate fire by millions of years. There's no way that if whatever God you believe in thinks that meat is your natural diet, we can't hunt an animal, we can't kill an animal, and we certainly can't eat it raw. So all I did was go back to our natural diet that we had, and then once I did, I haven't been sick a day, you know, really, in 4.5 years.
That's great.
Cured myself of all these things. Massive poops. Like, I used to put so much, oh, my God, am I gonna poop today? It's funny when I get people on the program, the things that we talk about, but one thing is actually, you know, not having to worry about that anymore because, it's just the stuff. I'm giving my body the food that I'm not becoming a factory for it to process things that weren't meant to be in it. So, but we'll continue this conversation another day. I know we went long, but I appreciate you guys so much. I hope we get to hang out live. You guys got to come out to Vegas or something.
I absolutely, brother. Next time I'm going to be there, I'll definitely give you a buzz. And anything you need, if you ever need to promote something or anything, let me know. I'll definitely put it on my wall, whatever. And listen, everybody's got to check Matt out. Check him out on YouTube and check out his site, theylaughyouwin.com. And a lot of people listen to the archives, Matt. So, you nobody sits down at 9 o'clock. You know, everybody's attention spans nowadays are fucked, but they'll hear this. They can hear the archives anytime. So,
give me a link too, and I'll post it, you know, too, because I love this, and I think, you know, we were allowed to talk about so many different things that somebody's going to get something out of this.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. It's on your wall. There's two links on your wall. It's my picture. All I got to do is click on it. About half hour after we're off the air tonight, it turns into an archive, and it's always there. So anytime somebody clicks on it.
For eternity.
The show will play.
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
So, thank you, brother. Tell your wife thanks for letting us borrow you for a couple hours tonight.
Oh yeah, right.
And give that beautiful baby a kiss, and let me know how you're doing once in a while.
Will do. Thanks so much, guys.
Nice meeting you.
Take care.
Be well. Take care. Sam, everybody. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Beautiful human being. Very funny. So, what did you think of Matt?
Well, he was great, but I'm glad he doesn't know what I'm having for dinner. I'll tell you, he's gone. He probably won't listen to the last 4 minutes of the thing on the archive, so I can tell you what I'm wearing. I'm having a bagel with roast beef, Swiss cheese and mustard, and a potato knish.
That's not good for the gout, brother.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, it's just not what he talks about. I do have some coleslaw to eat, too, which is very good for you. But, you know, the other stuff, no. He's right. He's right. It's amazing I've lived this long.
Well. And
you know that both my father and his father died at 65 and 66. So I'm at the edge right here. The genetics are going to start kicking in soon, I think. But who knows?
Well, hopefully you'll do a little better with the medicines and shit nowadays.
Well, yeah, I've already got a 2 years. So, you know, let's see if it continues.
You know, I need somebody to do my fucking voices, fuckface.
No, I'm not going to die that fast, but...
just fucking cut the shit. Speaking of voices, right before the show started tonight, I was, I'm writing episode 32 right now.
Oh,
and
good.
I'm doing it about 70s TV shows, and I was just typing this line about, okay, so I was talking about what show Isabel must have liked. I'm like, oh, Isabel, you little whore. What was your favorite show, Chico and the Man? And Isabel goes, no, it wasn't Chico and the Man, Fatso. My favorite show was anything the great actress Rita Moreno was on. Remember Rita Moreno?
Yeah.
My favorite show was...
People always confuse her with Cheetah Rivera.
Okay. Was anything the great actress Rita Moreno? All right, and I'm gonna put that in there. Was anything the great actress Rita Moreno or Cheetah Rivera was in? I'm gonna add that right in there, Marco. So Marco punching it up. Or Cheetah Rivera.
Because nobody, as she says, I like them both because nobody could tell the difference anyway. It's true. They always would be mistaken for each other.
Too many words, Mark. Your comedy always has too many words.
All right, that's why you're a good editor.
Okay, because that's why I'm a better comedian. Okay, no, wasn't the Chico and the Man, Fatso. My favorite show was anything the great actress Rita Moreno or Cheetah Rivera was on. Okay, Mikey. Oh,
what is Julian like?
Wait a minute. Now I have to fucking change it because I forgot. I said, okay, Mikey, she had more class than one little finger. Now I have to change it. They had more class.
They both, yeah, right.
They had more class. Hold on. they had more class in one little finger than you had in your whole enormous bloated body. And then I went, and then Mikey goes, okay, well, I know Tyrone loved the Jeffersons. And then here's Tyrone's big line. Ready? Tyrone loved the Jeffersons and Good Times, except I didn't like the skinny dude. We walking around going, dynamite, dynamite. I mean,
Tyrone liked the Jeffersons and Good Times, but I didn't like that skinny motherfucker. What was his name? Jimmy J.J. Walker. Always said dynamite, dynamite. Hated that.
I mean, what was he trying to blow up anyway? Black dudes never play with no dynamite. You crazy white people are always the ones blowing shit up. We don't have no Timothy. We don't have no Timothy McVeigh on our side. And I didn't like
that's
Michael.
Good. That's good.
I didn't like Michael. No black dudes ever acted like Michael. What was his problem? But Velma, man, oh man, Tyrone liked Velma. Oh yeah, Velma would come on the television. Tyrone would be all happy. Sometimes Tyrone would have to lock the door on Mama, so Mama couldn't get in.
Wow.
So Mama, get it? So Mama couldn't get in because he'd be jerking off when Velma.
I do, but it's funny. But also, let's mention the fact that the cartoon I mentioned to a couple of people today anticipated what happened today at the Museum of Natural History.
Oh yeah, it's funny. It's funny.
It's a cartoon. Or those of you listening, we did an episode about what, 2 months ago was it, or a month ago, about people rioting about the statue of Teddy Roosevelt in front of the Museum of Natural History. And in that statue, he's standing with an American Indian and a black man. And I didn't know it was a black man in it until I read the article that I shared on Facebook today. So I don't know what they're after Teddy Roosevelt for. And I thought maybe it's animal rights people because he killed the animals and stuffed them and shit. But no, it's not even that. It's just the same old thing. People just want to tear everything down now.
Where's that picture? Put a post on Facebook about that.
I posted. I posted the article, and the article.
Did you post that the brilliant Mike Boyle foreshadowed this in his brilliant cartoon?
I said the cartoon foreshadowed it. I didn't want to. I don't know. I didn't want to mention names or whatever, but the cartoon foreshadowed. And it's funny because a picture of the. I guess you didn't see it. I also put it on your messenger. The photograph that they have where the idiots threw the red paint is almost identical. There's two articles, but one of them is almost identical to the one that they used to draw in the cartoon. It's really interesting. And so it was saw the cartoon, and this is what caused them to do
that. I want you to amend that post to say the brilliant Mike Boyle foreshadowed this in his cartoon Rotten Apple. Thank you.
Okay, I will.
Thank you. Thank you.
I will.
Okay. Oh, fucking people are still texting me 10:30 at night. Leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah. If you get this out tonight, I'll record it tomorrow. I'm not recording tonight. I'm exhausted.
Listen to me, Mark. You'll fucking record when I tell you to record.
Okay, all right. Okay, okay.
You think Harvey Weinstein's the only person who can sexually abuse people because he's powerful?
Ooh. Oh, my.
Okay.
Oh my.
All right. There. I said it. All right. That's it, people.
Oh my.
We're done. Thank you, Mike.
All right, everybody. Who's the guest next week on the Mike Boyle show?
I don't even fucking know. I'm too tired.
We got to get somebody. Hey, if you're a famous person or if you're Harvey Weinstein and you want to come on the show and express your opinion about what's happening to your life, Harvey Weinstein, we'll put you on the Mike Boyle show next week or the week after, whatever. You're out of rehab. Call us up. Give us your side of the story, Harvey. We want to know what your side is.
Go eat your bagel. Bye. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.